This is the Rich Eisen Show.
All right, let's fire up Ravens fans Derrick Henry. Let's do it.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You're standing next to Lamar Jackson pre-snap. What are you thinking?
I'm just tell eight lead, and I'm gonna be right behind you.
You know the Ravens use fullbacks too. You
big guy. Seen him on film a lot, so I'm definitely familiar with him, yeah, for sure.
Mr. Ricard, you're gonna beam you up.
Earlier on the show, keeper of the Stanley Cup, Howie Barrow. Coming up, actor and producer Dennis Quaid. Plus, your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, we just had a heck of a first hour of this program. It's kind of wild that I just had in my head a thought as I looked to my left, because you know when you're living life and you want to take in the moment. So I just took it in. I'm like, there goes the Stanley Cup. As I watched it get wheeled out on its crate. The crate's got wheels. Off it goes. See you later.
It's such a cool awesome.
I got to say, man, just not to interrupt you, but just
no. Go ahead.
Thank you. Because just since I've been here, I've got to see the Lombardi. I've got to see the Stanley Cup.
That we're halfway home.
Without you in this show,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, dude.
Just amazing.
This is fun. So we need the Larry O.B.
Yeah.
Larry O.B.
And the Commissioner's Trophy. No, we have seen the Commissioner's Trophy.
That's right.
We went to the Big Slick in Kansas City. They brought it.
Oh, they brought an old one, the Royals one.
They brought both of them.
They brought both of them. Yeah. They brought the most recent one. And then when Brett Saberhagen came out as a guest with Paul Rudd, they brought out the 85 one.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's get the Larry O.B.
So that's all that's missing now. Is that like, would that be the sports television version of the EGOT?
Exactly. Who else has that, by the way?
To have all four trophies at some point on the set of the program?
We'll have to get Jeannie to bring it in next time she comes on set.
There we go.
They got a couple.
Please bring the Larry O'Brien. It's not too far up the street.
Yeah.
Plus, they got 18 of them.
I was just going to say, they could leave one here. And they would miss it all.
Put it on the. Or she would just take it off the hood of her car. Right? She uses it as a hood ornament. And just take the Larry O.B. and bring it here.
Or we can wait until Ballmer wins, when the Clippers win this year, and he could bring it in.
Nicely done.
Yeah. That would probably be the best thing.
Like the version of having an EGOT, we've had three of the four.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, man.
And who came in here who thought that was really the World Cup trophy that you had?
Basketball player.
Basketball player?
Yeah. The kid who was in that movie with Adam Sandler, and now I'm drawing a blank of his
name. Yeah.
Hernan Gomez.
Hernan Gomez.
He thought it was the real World Cup trophy.
This is exactly the size
and
all.
It's the size. It's a perfect
really
replica.
Does. It is an amazing replica.
I love fake trophies.
The show open that we did for our Vegas Super Bowl shows, where we did a Ocean's 11 reenactment in a Ken Tulo special, where I'm stealing the Lombardi trophy. That wasn't the real Lombardi trophy. We were wondering, do we call up NFL Network and ask to borrow one? I'm like thinking, I don't even know if we have a Lombardi trophy at the NFL Network or not. And Del Tufo's like, don't worry, I got a replica at home. And it looks just like it.
It was perfect. But you paid a few $100 for that.
Oh, no, that thing was expensive. I'm getting a 98 Yankees.
Commissioner's Trophy? Yeah. 98. What does that mean, 98? So it says 1998 Yankees on it?
When they want it.
It's a hunk of metal. Might just wait and get the 2024 version of it, because the Yankees are now 10-2 for only the fourth time in their history. Only fourth time in their history. Last time they did it was there in 1992. They won the AL pennant the last time they won it, I think. They didn't win it in 92 then. I saw it on the screen last night. I was watching the Yankee game last night on YES.
You're back?
On my MLB app. Of course.
He was out for a little bit.
When was I out? I was never out.
Two years ago, you were little.
TJ's right.
92, you started 10-2?
That's what I saw on the screen.
And you finished 76 and 86.
So then that was the wrong year.
We don't like that year.
It was only the fourth time Yankees ever started 10-2.
You guys are balling right now.
Hey, listen, it's all working right now. And Garrett Cole's not even healthy.
Oof. He ain't playing this year.
You don't think so?
No.
Why?
With why
all these other pitchers having arm injuries, why rush a guy back?
Yeah.
Do you really think it's the pitch clock?
I think I heard Tyler Glasnow talk on a podcast, and he said it has to do with the regulation of the sticky stuff. Whereas.
What do you mean?
If whatever you're using, pitchers used on their fingers and hands to pitch, right? You have a lot more tact. Because you're holding the ball on your fingertips.
Yes. Yep.
But without it, You got to hold the ball a little bit more in your palm to get a better grip, and you're using different muscles, and it
so that
causes more strain on your elbow without it.
So that's why we're seeing a rash.
One of his a theory of his, a guy who has had a recent arm injury.
But didn't the Players Association send out a release basically blaming the pitch clock?
Yes.
I think that's an easy blame.
But so because you're going faster?
Faster, more fatigue.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
More stress. Less time in between.
How about
batters,
it's just that everybody's chasing 110 miles an hour?
I think that's a factor. I think it's a many different factors are kind of contributing to this right now. But I don't think it's a coincidence that these guys who are getting injured right now are the guys who throw the hardest.
Mm. True.
What is Strider's update on him? What are we waiting to hear how bad it is?
Waiting. He was getting a second opinion.
That's never good.
No. And then Nick Pivetta, Red Sox, just went on the DL.
Oh, my goodness.
Injured list now with a flexor strain, which is usually a precursor to a UCL injury.
Hey, thank goodness Giannis is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw that last night. When anybody just goes down non-contact and then grabs the back of their calf or anywhere near.
And the confused look on his face, too. Yeah, it's like,
because, again... Anytime somebody hurts their Achilles or pops their Achilles, they look to see behind them who just hit them.
Who kicked them. That's what
hurt. Right. Yeah. And Giannis went down and kind of looked around like what just happened.
That's a telltale sign. Right?
Because you're kind of surprised that somebody kicked you because last you looked, no one was near you. And so that had all the makings.
Yeah.
The markings.
I remember when Kobe tore his, that he said the first thing, he's like, who kicked me?
I have now that is just what Woj said that is
calf strain.
It's a calf strain that is his Achilles is intact. I don't mean to alarm Bucks fans, I don't know what you do. I mean, obviously you're going to hope that he comes back and he'll be ready at some point in time, and maybe you win your first round series without him because you don't want to rush it back. Because if I'm not mistaken, that's how it all started with Durant.
Yes, his calf was injured
for Golden State.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
Complaining of a calf injury during training camp, and then boom.
This is usually how it starts.
Yep.
And we're wondering, are the Warriors going to play him? Should he come back or not? And then remember that he had that dynamite first quarter.
Yep.
And then the whole country watched his calf quake.
Yeah.
Whew. But honestly, I honestly thought for a split second, it's like, poor Giannis, poor Bucks. And I'm like, I thought, poor Doc. I mean, Doc's obviously you're taking this job because you want to get back in the game, clearly.
And that happens.
But you have Giannis with Lillard. And I don't know. Do you even attempt to play Giannis in the first round series? Like, you just...
Because it depends on who they play.
Plus, I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. I'm not seeing his MRI. I have no idea. I don't know how he's feeling or anything like that. But you have to...
I mean, obviously, he's going to want to be out there.
Right. Isn't this Joe Burrow situation, right, where you thought he blew out his Achilles and it was just a calf?
Exactly.
Then he came back and he was dealing with it for the first month and a half of the season. And do you play him at all? Maybe just sit him out?
Jamar Chase was like, we got it. We're good. See you in week five.
And then he was great after a while, and then it was his damn hand that gave. But at least he's okay, right?
Yeah, because that looked really scary. Which means, look, Achilles, he'd be out all of next year, most likely, too.
Exactly.
So at least he's okay. We're going to talk NFL draft shortly with the lead draft analyst for The Athletic. Dane Brugler is going to be joining this program. So we're going to be focusing on the NFL draft. We're going to have a segment every day all the way up until draft week when we're bringing the show to Detroit.
Yeah.
And it's going to be great. It's going to be a fun draft week. We've never done the show, TV and radio, from an NFL draft before. We will do so this year.
That's true.
NFL news broke today. I remember a couple of weeks ago, Mo Hurst, Michigan finest, said that it was the Browns going to be visiting the
He was on a podcast. The Eagles was like, home. Hey, we're going to Brazil.
The Eagles home of Brazil. It was going to be. We knew the Eagles were playing the Friday of kickoff week in Brazil. And he's... So we all thought, oh, he just leaked. It's Browns and Eagles. It's Packers Eagles. Mm. How about them apples? Now, look, aren't, you know, Packers are like Brazil colors, right?
Kind of. Yeah. It's a nice mishmash of the Brazil flag with these two teams.
Guys, we should have been able to figure it out just from the Brazil flag. Like, why didn't we realize color scheme? They told us
that's right.
Who was playing without telling us.
We should take a cue from all that insanity.
That, guys. Yeah. We should have.
First time in 50 years the NFL is playing a game on a Friday to kick it, kicking off of a
we're so close to having NFL games on every day of the week during the season.
Again, this is the last Friday, though, that the NFL is allowed to hold a game. Because they're, if I'm not mistaken, their antitrust exemption that they got from Congress in the late 60s was predicated on the fact that they are not allowed to play games on a Friday during a high school football season.
Oh, wow.
Because the Congress folk that said, no problem, you can have what you're looking for as long as you are not going to mess with my constituents' Friday Night Lights. And the NFL's like, sure, which is why... you know, you're allowed to have it on this Friday because high school football season, I believe, begins that weekend. So it's the last Friday you can have one. And it's also why the Black Friday game on Amazon kicked off at 3 p.m. because you're not allowed to have it at night.
Mm. Wow.
So
high school football is very important.
Yeah. So this is why the NFL is able to do this, and you're not going to see Friday night games throughout the season. No, you're not going to see that, but you are seeing Wednesday games on Christmas this year. You're seeing a couple based off of two teams that are playing the previous Saturday. So Saturday to Wednesday is the same length of sit down and rest time between Sunday and Thursday. So the NFL's like, we'll figure it out. And the NBA is probably like, damn it. We thought we wouldn't have any NFL games against counter programming our NBA Christmas headliners. So you've got the Packers are just a fascinating team because they came out of nowhere last year. They had a nice burst in the middle of the season where Jordan Love began to have it click, and then they had a bit of a dip that included that Monday night loss to Tommy Cutlets.
Oh, that's right.
And then the Packers caught fire.
Yeah.
And became the proverbial team you don't want to face, and they won and done TJ's team and put the scare in the San Francisco 49ers. Sure. I mean, that first half of the divisional playoff weekend was placed on the lap at the feet of Brock Purdy not being any good, and then we all saw him turn it on in the fourth quarter of that game, and the rest was history. The 49ers damn near won the Super Bowl. But you're seeing a team that's got $11 million collectively on the cap of wide receiver talent that is really good. And they, for some reason, told Aaron Jones via Condios and brought in Josh Jacobs. Defensively, they're a really stout team. And do you put the Packers' first game in year two of Jordan Love's starting tenure right there front and center in Brazil on a Friday night? By the way, it's exclusively on Peacock. I believe it's a lot of NBC Universal dollars put on the table for that exclusive right, and you will be able to watch that right here on Roku through the Peacock app. So make sure you're aware of that. That's a Friday night Peacock game. And what a spot against Philadelphia, which had sort of like a reverse finish of the season to Green Bay, where they were 10-1 and then fell off the planet and then got one and done. And we will see what they look like against Green Bay. And I've got an interesting question for you here.
What do you got?
Maybe make a Twitter poll out of this.
Oh, I love Twitter polls.
I know you do. Jordan Love.
Okay.
C.J. Stroud.
C.J.
Both had tremendous first seasons as starters in the NFL. First full seasons as starters in the NFL. Facts. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one will have the biggest leap up this year? And add in a third one that is having his second full season as a starting quarterback in the NFL after a terrific first full season as a starter in the NFL. Put Brock Purdy in that poll. Yeah, buddy.
He's played more football than
Jordan
Love.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Which is what? It's just six games the year before?
Six games, playoff.
One playoff game. One.
Played more games. Jordan Love.
But throw him in there.
Well, how can he get more higher? He went to the Super Bowl.
Excuse me. Do you not forget?
Do you not remember
all the Brock Purdy hate?
A leap up is going to the Super Bowl. The guy's already been there.
No, also statistically.
The guy was in the top five MVP.
Despite people thinking he didn't belong there. So I think a step up would include. So you're asking me, what does a Brock Purdy step up look like?
What is a step up for the guy? He was awesome all year.
Everybody
MVP finalist, and he went to the Super Bowl.
He was awesome all year, and everybody thought it was because they were rolling the footballs out. It certainly wasn't him. And then he had a three-game stretch where everybody thought, well, that's the real Brock Purdy, isn't it? And then he had a playoff debut where everybody thought he's the one who's going to hold him back. And then they had a game in the NFC Championship game where everyone's wondering, maybe that first half where Detroit was beating the crap out of him, Brock Purdy wasn't doing what he's supposed to do. And then leading into the Super Bowl, everyone's questioning his abilities and talent. How about him coming out the gate and everybody views him like they view C.J. Stroud all year long?
Well, the Stroud thing wasn't all year long.
Dude, Stroud thing
It wasn't game one.
It wasn't game one, but it was.
But game one, the 49ers were a Super Bowl favorite right from the get-go.
He is viewed a Brock Purdy step-up season.
They were favored over the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Brock, but not because of Brock Purdy. And you know
it. Maybe not because of Brock Purdy. He's the friggin' quarterback.
Yeah, but come on, dog. Please. We can't rewrite history now. Like, everyone thought Brock Purdy was the weakest link.
Of course.
And nobody thought.
And the rest of the team was carrying him.
Yeah. Like, come on now.
The dude was a top five MVP and a top five in the betting.
We were an outlier of this program pounding the table on his behalf.
Most people are like, well, of course he's going to be good. Look at his team. They were doing everything.
Oh, it's McCaffrey.
What is the level up now?
I'm telling you what the level up is. The level up is he does it again statistically. And he's actually viewed as an MVP quarterback, not just some Bambi.
He was viewed as an MVP quarterback.
Yeah, by voters, not by fans.
And the gamblers. Like
Chris, I guess you only have one TV on in front of you. I've got all six programs and what they say about Brock Purdy, or what they said.
Interesting. Okay.
How do you not remember this?
Throw it up there.
I don't remember it.
So you don't think we should include him on our Twitter poll?
I'm just saying, I don't think he...
Okay, now that we've argued about whether he should be on there...
I'm ahead of these guys already. No?
In terms of experience, he is. But in terms of...
I mean, his team is definitely better.
Reaching the level up that we're hoping these guys get to.
So then what should I...
The guy went to the Super Bowl overtime.
So he is not to be included as a second-year full-time starter in the NFL. He is. That's what he is. He's a second-year full-time starter in the NFL.
He started a playoff game his rookie year.
So did Jordan Love, essentially.
Not really.
Well, I mean, he had 3 years sitting around.
And neither did Patrick Mahomes.
His first full year, both C.J. Stroud and Jordan Love and Brock Purdy, in their first full years as being starting quarterbacks in the NFL, started a playoff game. They all are. I mean, I know you're saying this is apples and oranges, but it is the truth.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
So then if you want to rephrase it, saying which one's going to have a better year in their second full year as a starter, instead of saying jump up.
Okay.
Because I think you have the issue of the jump up.
Jump up, I think I have an issue with.
Making me defend Brock Purdy over here. Exactly, which is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Defending Brock Purdy. If he's so damn good, why do you have an issue defending him? That's my point. You just helped make it. Thank you. We'll take a break.
Spending your life.
Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Let's talk draft with the NFL draft writer and expert. That's next. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen. Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. He is his beast, which is the nickname for his massive 400-player draft preview, is available for everyone who has an athletic subscription. That includes me. Dane Brugler is here on the Rich Eisen Show, NFL draft writer and expert for The Athletic. Good to see you, Dane. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Rich?
When do you start drilling in on prospects 400 deep like this? When does your process start?
It's a year-round process. I treat my job as if I were a scout, and really it goes back. You know, I already have information for next year's class that you inevitably pick up by watching film or talking to players, talking to coaches, talking to scouts. So it really is a year-round process. The summer is when you get that base of, okay, these are the guys we need to be watching. Then the season happens. Then the All-Star games, the combine, and then March and pro days and team visits. And so it really is a year-round process of trying to compile all this information. They're all puzzle pieces. And that's what you're trying to collect, as many puzzle pieces as possible to give you the best and most clear picture of who these players are. And so I think, you know, hopefully with this draft guide, you know, there's over 2,000 players ranked in there with NFL verified testing information for each one, over 400 reports. So there's a, if you're a diehard, if you're just a casual fan, there's something in here for everybody.
Well, I'm definitely going to dive into it for sure, Dane. And so in your process of looking at players year round, give me the name of one player in your tenure of doing this that went from somewhat on the radar screen to exploding and winding up being a top five, if not top overall pick in the draft. You got one for me?
Well, let's use this year with Jaden Daniels, right? Jaden Daniels was a player that you go back to Arizona State, and he had that really good freshman year. Came in, he helped make Brandon Ayuk a first round pick. That's how long Jaden Daniels has been playing college football. But then things kind of went south for the Sun Devils and for Jaden Daniels. He transfers to LSU, had a really good 2020 season. But even, you know, looking at him over the summer, you thought maybe third round, maybe fourth round, you know, a good player. But then what he did this past year for LSU, you know, did he have a great offensive line? Yes. Did he have all-stars at receiver? No doubt about it. But you can't take away what he was able to do in terms of creating big plays. And that's something I think translates to the next level. Nobody had more plays of 20-plus yards than Jaden Daniels. He had 90 this year. And we only have the data going back 5-6 years, but I'd be shocked if that's not a record. To put that in perspective, Joe Burrow, in his great final year at LSU, he had 87 plays of 20-plus yards, and he did that in 15 games. Jaden Daniels had 90 in only 12 games. So his ability to create the big play with his arm and his legs is the reason we're talking about him as a strong possibility of maybe being that number two pick to the Commanders.
So that was going to be my next question, is despite you know, Caleb Williams and the hype hoopla and things of that nature, and having seen what his Heisman Trophy season was 2 years ago, and him not having the line and receivers like Jaden Daniels was blessed to have at LSU in his Heisman Trophy winning season of this year. Do you think there is a question of what the Bears should do at the top or not?
No, I think this is a Caleb Williams draft. I mean, I think there were times during the season when you watch Drake May, you watch Jaden Daniels, and then maybe Caleb's having a tough game against Notre Dame. There are times where you keep an open mind. But at the end of the day, Caleb has all the tools. And physically speaking, he has the arm strength, you know, he has the mobility. But there are two things with Caleb that stands out the most. First, it's his rare football awareness. It's different. It's his pocket mobility. It's his ability to create when things fall apart. So that rare football awareness is number one. And then number two is he's always in a ready to throw position. It doesn't matter what is needed from his body. He has the base. He has the torque through his hips. He has the body balance. It's really unique to watch. And you think about like a guy like Matthew Stafford. He has that, but he has this huge arm. So it doesn't matter how awkward of a position he's in, he can make the throw. Patrick Mahomes has it too. Doesn't have quite the arm strength, but he has the natural body balance where he's able to make these throws from a non-set position. Caleb Williams is kind of in the middle of that, where he has a really strong arm, not quite Stafford, but a really strong arm. And then he also has that body balance where he can make these throws that a lot of other quarterbacks cannot make. So is Caleb a perfect prospect? By no means am I saying that. He needs to clean up the fumbles, needs to be a little more consistent working from inside the pocket with his initial reads. But you take all of the skills that he has put on tape the last 3 years, and you're willing to bet on that translating well to the next level.
Do you agree with the decision the Bears made then to trade Justin Fields out and go for Caleb?
No doubt. I don't think they had much of a decision. I think you, in terms of just resetting the quarterback clock, because it was as much of an economic decision as it was a football decision. You're resetting that quarterback clock. Especially with when you have players in the locker room really voicing their opinion about what should happen, that's a fine line to walk. You have to make sure you don't lose that locker room. Mm-hmm. But in Ryan Poles, he didn't draft Justin Fields, obviously. This is his chance to draft his quarterback. And, you know, you don't pass on a guy like Caleb Williams. I think he's going to go down as the quarterback that gets talked about. Okay, if we have to rank the top quarterback prospects the last 10 years, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams, he's right there in that mix in terms of just the most skills, the most talent, the best traits. And so obviously time will tell if it works out, but I think the Bears honestly didn't have much of a choice to make. This was the right way to go.
Dane Brugler, NFL draft writer for The Athletic, and check out his draft preview and the number of prospects that are drilled down on are very impressive, to say the least, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So walk me through what the quarterback evaluation is after Caleb, in your estimation.
For me, Drake May from North Carolina is the number two quarterback. I think he's cut from the same cloth as Justin Herbert. 6'3", or 6'4", and a half, really good athlete. There's still some things he's figuring out. There's no doubt about it. And when his arm gets a little juiced up, he can be he can miss some throws, especially easy throws, slants, digs, some simpler, more simple throws. But his combination of athletic skills and arm talent and mental toughness really stands out. And he comes from a family where I'm a big believer in the older brother theory. If you have older brothers, you were raised a little bit differently because you're always trying to keep up. And you look at Drake May, he had three older brothers, were all college athletes, baseball, basketball. And so he, growing up playing all these sports, he was playing up a level. He was trying to keep up with his older brothers, and that helped develop his competitiveness and his toughness. Mm. I think he's wired the right way. I think the physical skill set is there. It's just about consistency. And so I'm sure there will be, like for most rookie quarterbacks, there will be ups and downs. And you know, a big part of this equation is where they go. The support system they get, with Caleb going to the Bears, you can make an argument that's the best situation for a number one overall pick at quarterback that, you know, maybe we've ever seen. But what happens, okay, with the Commanders at two, the Patriots at three, you look at the Patriots, their wide receiver group is it's lacking. It's not an impressive depth chart there. The offensive line has some holes. So if, say, Jayden Daniels goes two, Drake May goes three, that's a little bit of a tougher situation for May. And so where these guys end up is as much of a conversation point with these guys' development as anything. We kind of talked about Jayden Daniels. J.J. McCarthy, I think, belongs in this conversation as well. It'll be really interesting if we see quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, 4. We've never seen that before. We could see quarterbacks at least in the top six. But with J.J., and I know fans hate to hear about win-loss record for quarterbacks, but NFL teams talk about it. They care about it. So it's relevant. And with J.J., 36-2 in high school, including a state championship, 27-1, including a national championship in college. So that's the type of pedigree that you're looking for. And, yeah, there's no doubt you wish there was more of a body of work for JJ as a passer. But when he was called upon, he made plays. You look at what he did on money downs. On this past year, 48.1% of his throws on third or fourth down resulted in a first down. Not just were completed, they resulted in a first down. That's number one by far among all these quarterbacks in this class. So when you think about the tools that he offers, you like him now, but you're excited about where he's going to be. But then also factor in the intangibles, the mental toughness. That's what wins coaches over. And so it's not going to be a surprise when we see J.J. McCarthy's name come off the board somewhere in those first six picks.
Dane Brugler here on the Rich Eisen Show. So you're just saying on paper or just on from your evaluation, for lack of a better phrase, it's May, then Daniels, then J.J. McCarthy. That's your, if you will, pecking order after Caleb in your evaluation?
For me, that's how I see it. But it is interesting when you talk to teams. It's different. I think one of the biggest misnomers in draft talk is the word consensus. The word consensus isn't really a thing because you go team to team and everyone has their different opinions on these guys. And, you know, even going back to a couple of years ago, some teams had Zach Wilson as the number one quarterback in that draft. And so it's different for every team based off of what they're looking for. Some teams are looking for someone that's more pro-ready, ready to go from day one. Other teams see the vision and can wait a little bit longer. And especially with a guy like J.J. McCarthy, who needs a little bit more projection, teams are split on just what his projection would be. So for me, it's Caleb, then Drake, then Jane Daniels, then J.J. McCarthy. But definitely is a split opinion among these quarterbacks from team to team.
Then a mutual friend of ours, Albert Breer, was on this program, Dane, a couple of days ago, and he said there's a split on Michael Penix where many scouts are kind of down on him. Coaches love him, and he calls that the Penix conundrum right now. What is your evaluation of Michael Penix Jr., Dane?
You know, I'm kind of split because I understand where the scouts are coming from. There's a lot about what Penix does that it worries you for the transition to the next level. And I think that the game against Michigan in national title game really showed it. Michigan is the closest thing that Michael Penix has seen to an NFL defense. And he looked like he wasn't ready for that stage. Against Texas, a more vanilla defense, he knew what was coming and he picked him apart. Against Michigan, where they really mixed up their looks and made him think and gave him happy feet and his eyes were all over the place. That's what he's going to face every single Sunday, and that's just tough. So there are several parts of his game that are inconsistent, his mechanics, his anticipation, his reaction to pressure. But I think where coaches really love Penix is the arm confidence. There is not a place on the field he is scared to throw. He will stretch it horizontally, vertically with his arm. And then the mental toughness. You think about what he has overcome over the years, the four season-ending injuries. Nobody wanted him out of Indiana. Washington was his only Power 5 offer to transfer after he left Indiana and entered the transfer portal. So he has overcome a lot. And you think about what he's done the last 2 years at Washington, and it won't be a surprise. I don't think Michael Penix is going to go top half of round one. But if we see a team, say the Raiders, trade back up into round one to get a Michael Penix, I don't think that'd be too surprising.
Where does Bo Nix wind up, do you think?
Yeah, I think he's somewhere in that early second round mix, kind of with Penix. You know, he's obviously on paper has everything you want. I mean, he set the completion percentage record. I think that Oregon offense did such a great job of putting him in position to succeed. So he knew where to go with the ball. There was a lot of dump offs, a lot of screens. I think that really pushed up that completion percentage. I do think that once NFL pressure and the walls close in, that's where I think things fall apart a little bit. So if you're going to draft Bo Nix in the first round, top 25, you're saying that you think he's going to be a top 15 quarterback at some point during his, you know, rookie contract. And I just have a hard time seeing him go to that level. And so to me, he's more of a middle of the road NFL starter. But for a lot of teams, that's an upgrade. And so, you know, if the Patriots end up passing on a quarterback at three, maybe we see them go with the Bo Nix route. We could see a team like the Rams, maybe if they're worried about Matthew Stafford beyond this year. The Broncos are really interesting. You know, what do they do with the 12th pick? And if they don't go quarterback early, they don't have a second round pick, the Sean Payton trade. So do they look to trade up with that third round pick? Do they look into next year's draft capital to move around? And one thing that's a point that multiple teams have brought up to me, looking forward, because teams always forward scout, especially a quarterback. Next year's quarterback class, there's not a lot to get excited about, at least at this point. You know, who knows? Maybe there'll be a Jaden Daniels who surprises us and comes out of nowhere.
Or a Burrow, right?
Semi-nowhere.
Or a Burrow.
Joe Burrow,
right?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a perfect example of, like, maybe – you know, how tenuous it is or dangerous it is to look over the steering and go, oh, there's nobody that great coming down the pike, so we should go maybe push somebody up here in this year. And so I guess that's one of my final questions for you, Dane, is Patriots perfect example. Giants, they're at six. They have some options. Do they move up? Do they stay put? Do they not take a quarterback because they – you know, have said publicly they believe Daniel Jones is going to come back and is still, a more than successful starter in the NFL. So my question for you is, let's just use New England as an example, and you got Knicks and Penix that's out there potentially to be traded up for in the back half of the first round. Is Marvin Harrison that good that you go and take the kid, Marvin Harrison Jr., third, or move around and take him there and forego Drake May or Jaden Daniels to take him and then go and get Knicks and Penix because you like them that much? Would you counsel that or no?
You consider it, but at the end of the day, the number one priority has to be let's get the quarterback right. And I think the Patriots are a great example because you look at the situation with Robert Kraft. He's, I think, what, 84 maybe? He just watched an offense last year where it was a train wreck. And I don't think he's ready to go through that again. He doesn't want to go through a so-so offensive season just to get the wide receiver. He wants that injection of life. He wants that quarterback. Now you have Elliott Wolf, who's 40 years younger, and I think he'd be more open to a trade back situation or a Marvin Harrison Jr. As opposed to taking the quarterback because he sees maybe more of the long term. But drafting a quarterback in the first round, especially the top 10, that is an ownership pick. And that is a big part of this conversation, is the ownership has to be, and the Giants are a great example of that. We know that they like Daniel Jones. And at the end of the day, if they don't draft a quarterback, the Giants, with that sixth pick, you can pretty much bet that came from ownership. They want to see Daniel Jones out there. They're not ready to throw in the towel on him yet. So with all these teams, we have to remember that the ownership plays a big part in who ultimately each of these teams drafts in the top 10.
Yeah, Robert Kraft, 82, just to throw that out there. But I totally get your point. Before I let you go, Dane, the prospect you love, you're just like, you know what, I'll pound the table for this guy. Not enough people talking about him. You know what I'm talking about with you right here. Lay that one out for me. Who is that?
I'll go with Malik Washington, receiver from Virginia, who, look, nobody should be compared to Steve Smith. But ultimately, every year, we've got a guy that gets compared to Steve Smith, right? So the guy that shouldn't be compared to Steve Smith, but you know, if we have to do it, it would be Malik Washington, Virginia. He's a smaller guy, but he makes plays. The way he can adjust to the football and get open and then create those explosive plays, that's the guy, late third, early fourth. I don't think he's going to go too much higher, but that's a guy I think could see making a pretty instant impact. On defense, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky, a corner who doesn't get enough love, undersized, but he is a really good player. I think he's another guy that should be at least a second or third round pick that doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Washington there. I mean, it just shows you how deep this draft truly is at wide receiver. And I know we say it a lot. It seems like we're saying it every year. This just feels that way. You know, having, you know, personally eyeballed them at the combine, they were just all eye popping and they were all big and many really big and physical wide receivers also. And it maybe that's why you're seeing the Bills just say vaya con Dios to Diggs in part. And Gabe Davis, you saw the Chargers let their top two wide receivers out, one by trade, one by just letting walk. Mike Williams, I know he's coming back from an ACL. I'm just wondering if we're truly seeing the league evaluate the wide receiver position in this draft appropriately, Dane.
Yeah, you know? I'm convinced that the rest of our lives, wide receiver is going to be a strength. if you're not a quarterback, you're going to go to wide receiver. If you're a young kid growing up, because you want the ball in your hands, and that's what the NFL has become, is a wide receiver league. And so last year was a strength. The year before it was a strength. This year, Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top, but Malik Nabers. Some teams have him as wide receiver one. And I mean, he's close. In last year, if Malik Nabers were in last year's draft or the year before, he would have been my number one overall player in the entire draft. He is that type of talent. He just happens to be in a class this year with Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. So he's number three for me, but he has the talent. And he's just 20 years old. He doesn't even turn 21 until July, his first training camp. And he led the SEC in catches each of the last 2 years. And you look at the traits, you look at the production. The simplest way to put it with Malik Nabers, he doesn't have a limitation. There is not a single limitation to his game. So all these receivers are easy to get excited about. Rhumo Dunze in that conversation as well. And then to your point, this is a position that stretches second round, third round, fourth round. A lot of really good wide receiver talent in this class. But I think they're going to go. I mean, in the first two rounds, we could see 14, 15 receivers. Wow. So it is a case of you can wait on your receiver, but they're going to go fast. So I think we're going to see a lot of teams go that direction first, second round.
Dane, thanks for the time. Everybody get an Athletic subscription because you get his NFL draft guide with that subscription. Thanks for the time, Dane. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, Rich.
You got it. That's Dane Brugler right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Excellent maiden voyage, to say the least. All right, lots to talk about. Let's take a break. We're back with that. And your phone calls, 844-204-RICH. Dennis Quaid is going to appear in studio, hour three. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Game Time Tickets, an authorized ticket marketplace now of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app, you know what? They actually go down as it gets closer to the first pitch. Killer last minute deals, all in prices, views from your seat, lowest price guarantee. And it's not just Game Time taking the guesswork out of buying Major League Baseball tickets. They do that for basketball, football, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. All in pricing. That's another provision for Game Time tickets. It shows you the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. So Game Time app. Download it, create the account, and use my code RICH. You get $20 off your first purchase. Restrictions apply. Visit GameTime.co for terms. Again, create the account, redeem the code RICH, and you get $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. How about Dane Brugler saying that if this was last year's draft, Malik Nabers would be number one? Yeah, number one prospect. And by the way, that's just, you know, you're viewing as a prospect. He would have put him above Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. And in this year, he's not even above the top quarterback and other top wide receiver. He's three on the top prospect list. But then again, top prospect lists from draft experts are different from mock drafts because a quarterback needy team is not going to choose a wide receiver. Unless you're the Patriots, do you do that? I mean, the cupboard is totally bare. Totally bare.
Man.
And you've got your choice is Drake May or Marvin Harrison Jr. And you're Elliott Wolf, and you're not even the already knighted full-time general manager. What do you do? You take Drake May.
I think so.
Because the owner's basically like, I want a young quarterback in here.
Yep.
Right? And that's what you do. Despite Marvin Harrison Jr. being the best wide receiver prospect, as we keep hearing over and over again in years. Because it's a quarterback-driven league, and that's what you do. And that's what the Patriots are going to probably have as their conundrum. Although Dane said he thinks Drake May is a better prospect than Jaden Daniels, that he's got Justin Herbert written all over him.
You hear that? You hear, like, a little Josh Allen? I don't know when the Drake May slander started in the last, like, month or so.
Oh, I know when it started. When Mitchell Trubisky crapped out.
And Sam Howell?
Straight up.
Like back-to-back.
Straight UNC up. Straight up. Yeah. Do you think, at the end of the day, the Bears would ever take a North Carolina quarterback over Caleb Williams? When the previous one that they took over the guy who Caleb Williams is compared to. Not in a million years.
What if Caleb Williams wasn't in this draft?
In a million years.
What if Caleb Williams wasn't in this draft?
Well, you can't take Drake May first. I'm talking about who's in this draft and who's choosing at the top. Do you think, after trading away a North Carolina quarterback, that they chose in the fifth round, that the Washington Commanders fan base would say, okay, let's choose the guy's replacement. I'm serious. It's not fair to the kid.
Yeah.
And it's not fair, but you're talking about that. And that's why evaluations have to include a ton of other stuff than the eye in the sky.
Yeah.
It's got to include who's drafting you, who's the coach, what's happened there, why was the coach just hired, and who was the previous quarterback that put him in a position to be second overall? And where do you go to school? Honestly, that's why I think, and it's going to be Drake May sitting there at three for you.
I'll take it. That's who I,
or do you trade down? Totally, the Giants love him so much, you go down to six.
Well, then what do we do at quarterback?
You run the risk of not getting J.J. McCarthy, or you found Penix, you love him so much, or Nix, you love him so much, you trade back up to go get it.
No thanks.
In the same way that the Bears are going to be, we're going to get our quarterback right off the bat, and then number nine overall, we'll get a nice new toy for him. You reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
You get the nice new toy, and then you go and get the quarterback that might not be as heralded, but in your estimation is better.
Yep, and that's why beating Pittsburgh and Buffalo was galactically stupid.
As you were saying at the time, they didn't listen to your memo.
Could have had Caleb Williams, and this wouldn't even be a conversation we'd be having right now.
And instead, Bill Belichick's talking to the Nebraska staff and wearing Washington Huskies clothes.
By the way, everyone was getting mad at me. Oh, how can you root for the team to lose? This is why.
Well, guess what, too,
this
pal?
This is why.
I was rooting for the Jets to lose in the war. Like, I'm not celebrating Frank Gore's touchdown against the Los Angeles Rams today, am I?
No, absolutely not. And you shouldn't have it then, and you shouldn't now. Stupid. Tried to tell everybody.
They didn't get the memo. Dennis Quaid's coming in studio, hour three.
And there really was a memo, too. That's the thing.
That's like, the thing, too.
We legitimately had a memo.
But it's
great
all
job beating the Steelers on Christmas. That was awesome.
And then the Broncos on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Christmas
yeah.
Eve
great,
and the Steelers.
Job, everybody.
But listen, say that all you want, but there are grown-ass men who are not going to – they don't care at the time. They play football, and it's their jobs on the line. You know, Kyle Duggar might have made some great plays in those games to cause him to get this big fat contract and have the franchise tag removed from him. That's the way it works. And he's not sitting there going, you know what, I need to play a little bit less than today because we need a better quarterback for a situation I might not be here for because I want to walk and I want to get my money. And that's a totally legitimate thought process because
totally
they're
legitimate.
True paid professionals.
Absolutely.
And Belichick is one of the most lead pipe wielding professionals in the history of such. And he's not going to go out there and say, we need to lose these games for long-term health. That just doesn't happen.
Pats have the number one pick. Is Bill still the coach?
I don't think so.
No matter what. The report that it was over after the Colts game in Germany, you buy that.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was there.
Speaking of a game out of the country that you might be in.
Are we going?
No. I'm an owner.
Hey, guys, I don't know if you're aware. We're not on Peacock anymore.
No.
You've been away a long time, huh?
But
don't wind up like
Packers.
Billy Bats.
I'm going, Chris.
No. You'll be watching it on Roku like the rest of us.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.